Now, your shoe repair, you do shoe repair as well?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How did you get involved in that?
How I get involved?
What was your first memory?
My first memory was that I had a couple of choices. Either shoemaker or carpenter. I chose shoemaker.
How were you given a choice?
Well, my parents, you know, I was in a small little town.
Would you repeat that? You went half a day to regular school?
Yeah, and half a day as an apprentice.
Okay, and this was in New Britain?
No, in Italy. This is in Sicily.
Okay. Huh. And what did your father do for a living?
Well, he was a farmer.
Huh. Why shoemaking or carpentry?
That's all there was. There wasn't many choices. Being an only child, he didn't want me to be a farmer, that's for sure. You know what I mean? They were always trying to have it a lot easier for me, let's put it that way.
Okay.
And plus the fact that I was American born, so, you know, they expected me to come here when I would get a little older, which they did. At age 15, then I came over here all by myself. So.
Oh, really? And where did you end up when you came here?
In Hartford.
Did you just go right into shoemaking?
More or less, yeah. Mm-hmm. To learn the machinery and things like that, because everything was handmade there.
Yeah. What was the apprenticeship like? How did it work?
Well, you go and under a regular shoemaker, and you start from scratch. You know, they'll teach you make tread first to
make the
tread. For stitching, you know, because everything is done by hand.
Okay.
See, it was special thread made.
Thread.
Okay. Thread. I know I don't speak English too good.
No, I don't think I hear it very well.
Oh, I see. Yeah. It wasn't as easy as it is here, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. So you learn how to make the thread. And what's the thread made of?
Linen, you know, a regular thread, then you have to wax it, 3, 4, 5 strands. It depends what you had. It all depends.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to worry about, ours are like 6 or 7 ply.
Uh-huh.
So the way they used to get it was 1 ply, and they just keep bunching them together. And then
wax it off.
Yeah. And put bristles in each end of it, you know, if you make the points.
What was your master shoemaker's name?
Sal Signorelli. He's dead now, of course.
And how old were you when you started?
Oh, that's hard to believe. There, am I 9, 10 years old?
You're 9 or 10?
Oh, sure. Like I said, half a day school and half a day you.
So the first thing you did was learn how to make.
Well, the tread, watch the boss, you know, do different things and, yeah.
Do you remember the first job you were given to do by yourself?
Well, not really. You want to know what the first job really was?
Yeah.
Straightening out nails. That's how bad things were. That's right. We used to use the nails 2 and 3 times.
Really?
Okay. Every time they get bent, they just stay on the bench, and then I used to pick them up, and I hit many a times I hit my fingers, too.
Ouch.
I know this is going to sound crazy.
Now it's all...
It's
and
just
they make the nails cutting the length and stuff.
Almost as modern as here now, you know.
Yeah.
I'm talking 60 years ago.
Right. So then, after you mastered.
Yeah,
is
then
there like a master test that you pass or something?
Not really. They bring you up face by face, you know.
Mm-hmm. And when they decided you were ready.
Yeah, then. Well, actually, in my particular case, I didn't have a chance to really complete the whole works. Even though I knew everything, you know, at age 15, what could you? Age 15, I took the boat when I came here.
To this day, we learn from each other.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you always learn from another cobbler, retired cobbler.
Oh, yeah. There's always,
there's so many different ways.
You never know enough.
Yeah.
There's no way that you can know the whole complete thing. There's always something coming out. There's always a different way, you know.
So you came to Hartford when you were 15?
When I was 15, and the first thing I did was work for $4 a week, trying to learn. A week, I said. I didn't say an hour. A week. And this particular shoemaker was teaching me the machinery, you know, because over here it's all more or less mechanized. You have to produce here. It's not like over there you do two pairs a week. Oh. You know what I mean?
Now, were you doing shoemaking or
Making and repairing both, yeah. Oh, yeah. Right from scratch. Mm-hmm. Right from scratch, yeah.
How long did it take to make, say, a pair of Oxfords?
Oh, a day or two. Uh-huh. If you're by yourself, I mean, you know. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, how long did you stay in Hartford?
Oh, for 30 years, I think. Because I've been in Hartford until I came to Hartford in 1931, and I left it in 1958 when I came here.
What made you decide to come here?
That's another long story.
Yeah. What do you think?
A friend of mine from Boca Raton, believe it or not, comes and see me, was sort of a cousin, you know. He was on vacation, so he stopped in my shop. And one thing led to another. He tells me, he says, Boca Raton, they could use a shoemaker, this and that, you know. I've never been here in my life. So at night I went home. I said to the wife, honey, how would you like to move to Florida? She says, are you crazy? Don't worry about it. So I decided to have her come down here. Not me, mind you, her. To see if she likes it. Because if a woman likes it, then you don't have no problems. See? So she took the train and came down here. She looked around and she sends me some postcards of some homes, you know, at that time. Crest Haven, I never forget it, in Pompano. They were for sale, you know, $9,000 or $10,000, I don't know what it was in those days. Yeah.
A long time ago.
Yeah, oh yeah, in 1958.
Yeah.
So she sends me, like, oh man, I fell in love right away. All the flowers, all the nice greens. This was in the winter, you know. So she came back home. I said, okay, pack it up and we'll go. If you like it, she says, oh, I like it. Okay, let's get rid of everything and get out of here. So we had two homes. I sold one and I kept the new ones for, you know, make sure that I was okay when I got here in case we didn't like it, see. But things worked out good. After 3 or 4 years, we sold the new one that we had just built, and here where I am ever since with my big boy.
Now, Tony, how did you get involved in all
that? Well, I was, you know,
I was after him all my life.
Sure, you know,
and I had a rough time.
They wanted us to always necessarily go to college, have things better than they didn't have.
Of course.
So, and I never really cared about school that much. You know, I dropped out at, 16, 17 years old. And I always liked the restaurant trade, you know. But as I was growing up, even in my shop, father's shop up in Connecticut, mm-hmm. I shined shoes, I the kids had to be somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I used to go in there and I used to help my father, you know, take off the heels and so forth. And then when the customer came in for shining his shoes and so forth, we used to, back then, those days, my father used to take in dry cleaning and hat blocking and stuff like that.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh. You did more than
that. Right. So I was about 11, 12 years old when we came down here. And then I did what I wanted to do and so forth because, you know, didn't really need anybody in the shop at that time, you know. And nobody likes to work for their own.
And,
you know.
And things were tough, lady.
Yeah. Yeah.
I opened the first shop in Deerfield. In the Cope Shopping Center. This I got to put in here. And yeah, I used to take in maybe $30, $40, $50 a week. Gross.
Right.
So what happens? I have to open another shop. I opened another one here, right here, which still exists over here in Boynton Beach. And by myself, I was running a boat to make ends meet.
Half a day at one.
That lady wasn't enough.
Yeah.
I had opened a third shop
in
Boca Raton. Right. Now that went real well. The one in Boca, which still exists.
Yeah.
So then I turned this one away in Boynton Beach over to my son-in-law, which he still has. And I closed the one in Deerfield when things really picked up. And I kept the Boca, which was beautiful.
Yeah.
Very, very good. And that's some of the story.
And Tony, you hung around the store.
I hung around the store. I worked for my dad on and off here.
Yeah.
You know, so for when I was out of work doing whatever else I was doing, other than going to school, whatever. And then I had an opportunity to buy a store, that was another shoe repair shop that was in Boca, mm-hmm. in the south end. And I took advantage of that. And I worked mostly on men's shoes. And then I,
And then I was, for about 2 weeks, my father worked me on ladies, because ladies, you have to be fussy.
I
know that ladies' shoes are actually the ones
well, because
start
of,
out on, because they're the toughest.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of the, you have to be more, you know.
You're more fragile.
See, the way I had figured it, I was up on 20th Street, and I wanted my son to be north. So we had, south rather, we had the whole town.
So,
because there was no other shoemakers.
Yeah.
So. I was a little north, you know, and things were going real well. And I figured right where the Royal Palm Shopping Center is, I had one for him there, opened up there, see. But some went wrong, and he didn't feel too good, and we had to get rid of that one.
Mm-hmm. So what kinds of, now, you did more than shoe repair. You made shoes here?
Yeah.
Well?
No.
Not down here.
Not in this country, no. Nah, they wouldn't pay.
No.
They wouldn't pay. Over here, it's all production. You got to produce.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's an expert. I mean, that's that's a trade in itself.
Yeah.
The making shoes. I mean, you know, a lot of the people, the people that my father probably grew up with didn't know. I mean, you know, worked for the VA. They made shoes, worked for the government, and so forth. And you know, we've had a few come in, and that's all they ever did was make shoes. You know, for people with just deformed feet and so forth. You know, similar to the man, what's his name, down here. And that's the kind of people you see. You don't see people now down in Florida, I mean, that really know the craft. I mean, no, they're fussy.
It's strictly repair now, orthopedic a little bit.
Right,
yeah.
That's the biggest part now.
How did you learn the ins and outs of orthopedic work?
That you learn that as you go along.
Yeah.
You know, I don't do the extensive work that Mr. LaRocca does.
Yeah.
You know, because you know, that's what he, you know, he specializes more in orthopedics and the shoe sales, and then he has the shoe repair shop mostly, mainly just to do his orthotics and things of that nature, and then takes in the shoe repairing too. I mean, you know, to help pay for the man, the salary, and the rent and whatever. I have been here now. We opened up a shop. I have a shop in the Delray Mall, and
that,
I have this one.
That
now.
Came after I sold the one in
in
Boca.
Right.
That was the fourth one.
I had the opportunity,
about.
But I didn't want to mess with it. You know?
I didn't think I was gonna bother with it anymore. I'll tell you the truth, you know, because I was almost retiring age. I was about 58 or something. I don't know. So then all of a sudden I decided. I said, "Well, okay." He was sort of interested this time, you know, so I said, okay, I'll open one more shop, and that's how I happened to open the one in the Delray Mall.
Mm-hmm.
Then I took him in as my partner.
Well, how old were you?
I was probably, at that time with the one in Delray, you're talking about?
Yeah.
I was probably about 29 or 30.
Yeah, something like that.
But you've been doing this pretty much ever since you were a kid.
Yeah, I've been doing it for over 25 years myself.
Hey, what's your birthday?
My birthday's 12/29/43.
You passed it on. You passed on the knowledge to Tony.
Yeah.
What were the most important things that you felt you had to teach him?
How to run the shop and everything else.
Pride in your work, Mark.
And in 1975, finally, I decided to give it to him, turn it over to him, and I quit.
So you're no longer doing shop?
No, I give my son a hand, you know, from back to time, whenever he needs, I'm here a few hours, you know.
Because good help in this business is very hard to find.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Anytime he gets me in a bind, I mean, I'm here, you know, I give my hand.
It's a dying art, you know, it really is, you know.
Yeah. Well, what were some of the things that you taught him how to do?
Well, shoe repair in general, I would say.
Sure, everything.
Yeah.
How to sew well down a shoe. And then later on, I learned the better ways of doing it myself.
I teach them how to make the treadle the way I taught.
Right.
Really?
Right. And now they have it already made up, so we don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, now everything,
you know,
like I said, it's...
Everything is more modernized now.
Where at that time, we used to repair maybe 10, 12 pairs a day. Now we do 50, 60 pairs a day.
Yeah.
Okay, how old were you when you started working shoe repair full time?
Probably 22, 23. Then I dropped off and did something else because of the pay. And that's why I got married early, and I worked elsewhere, not in the business, not in the industry, somewhere
out of
else,
the business.
You know. And then I got back into it. As
that was at Delray Mall.
No, that was in the Boca store.
Okay,
the
so
Boca.
You were...
Delray store didn't evolve until 1975.
Okay. So basically, you were about 25 and you sort of came back to it.
No, in Delray Mall, I was probably close to 30 years old there.
Now, it looks like you do more here than just...
Yeah, here, because of the reason for rents are so high now, you know, it's not like you pay $200, $300 a month. Now you pay $1,200, $1,500 a month. So you got to supplement. I do copies. I do laminate, knife and scissors sharpening. I cut keys. That's to help supplement. Bring people in here. They you know, even if they don't have shoe repairing, it's an extra service. It's like you go to a lot of the big large grocery stores now that have the drug stores and the liquor stores, and it's one stop shop, so to speak. While they're here, they look around, see what else I have. They see the shoe repair shop is here. My father's always had a good reputation. I consider myself having a good reputation.
Same thing when I was in Deerfield. I forgot to tell you about this. Things were so tough that I went into the dry cleaning besides. I had a big store, you know, so I bought a few racks, you know, and to hang up the clothes, you know, and I used to give out the work, of course, you know, and they used to bring it in, you know, I used to get a percentage.
How have things changed from, say, from Hartford?
Oh my God. What a change. Oh, you're kidding.
What's changed?
Everything. I came here, Boca Raton alone was only 5,000 inhabitants.
Right.
You can imagine now. Yeah. Deerfield, I think that was the only shopping center there.
In the business, though.
There's no comparison. Yeah. Things are very good now.
Yeah.
Almost 100%. If a guy doesn't make a living today
in
shoe repair, he's not good.
Mm-hmm. Now, he hasn't gotten the kind of equipment.
Yeah.
It's just more modernized.
I mean, they may have a few different machines.
It's all basically the same.
But it's basically the same.
They have, years ago they used to have a chain stitch McKay's.
Yeah.
Now they're lock stitch McKay's. And equipment is very
expensive.
They have
modernized where you could more or less produce more, see.
Yeah, and it's faster and so forth. The shoes they make today aren't as good quality as they were back then.
With the expenses the way they are today, you better produce, believe me.
And back in 1970, 71, we were getting like $8-$9 for full soles and heels. Today it's $30.
That's right. You used to
buy soles, full soles for $15-$16. Now
less
it's 60,
than
$65 for a dozen.
Oh, yeah.
Glue is...
No, there's no comparison.
Now it's $15, $12, $15 a gallon. You
know. Now are the glues and the... composites, they all made out of the same stuff?
Basically, for many years, for over 12 years, I've been using Master Cement, name brand.
They've
and
got
now
these.
Recently, I'm going to start changing now and going to a different brand. It's a clearer glue. It doesn't have the strong fumes. And some people are bothered by the fumes and so forth. It bothers, irritates their fingers. My father has this problem. You know,
I had that problem myself.
It gets near it. Just
sometimes I get my hand for 2 or 3 hours.
Up his hands.
Right away you see, right in there.
So now I changed
couple
this other glue because I've heard other shops talk about this glue is better. It sticks just as well, if not better, and it doesn't irritate make you sick or irritate your hands and so forth, you know.
I knew a shoe repairman in Massachusetts, Wayland, Massachusetts. He designed a lot of the Landis machines. His name's Angelo Giordano.
My father might know.
And
no.
He had apparently some kind of bone marrow disease as well. But his fingers, they were incredible. He had no feeling of being
No
there.
Kidding.
And his hands were just covered in that glue all the time.
Yeah.
I swear.
Well, today it's a lot different, though. In those days, we used to use a lot of rubber cement.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But now this cement here, they call, like it says, all-purpose. You could even, don't even have to stitch some of the soles.
Really? Yeah, and it's really good bonding.
But, of course, you pay for it. It's $15 a gallon or more.
Yeah, almost.
You know, where at that time I'm speaking of, there was maybe $1, $2 a gallon, you know.
And then because of the petroleum byproducts have gone up,
And the rubber cement was all you needed for was just enough to glue, and then you use nails here and there, and then stitch them around. You know,
the heat press.
Where now you don't use nails no more. You just glue them. Makes a beautiful job, as you can see. There, see, nice, like when the shoe comes out of the factory. See, those are the big improvements. So,
what kinds of repairs do you do most of?
Mostly you soles and heels for women. Women today,
ladies' heels.
They're bringing 5-6 pairs at a time.
Boots,
a
lot of
you
boots.
You can see I do a lot, big boot business here. I've always.
He does a beautiful job on the boots. Boy, he makes me proud.
Western boots,
beautiful.
A lot of people in this trade have learned just quickly and so forth. They don't really take a lot of pride in their work.
they don't take a lot of pride, and it hurts it for the people that do. I've always taken pride
one
in my work.
One thing I always
people let you know when they've been in a shop in the past, and you know, or you know, like I don't push full soles in my store. Mm-hmm. I show them in the half sole. The half sole blends right in. Well, they're
it
so
looks
used
just
to
like it.
That lump being in there and the nails being across, and it looks doesn't look well, you know. And now with the way, you know, things are modernized and so forth, and the way I've learned through my father and other people that work for me and I've worked for too, you learn different ways of doing things and to better improve your work and so forth. And so and I've always had people tell me how, you know, or shoemakers come in, so you, I can tell you take pride in your work. And it's important, it's always, and it's paid off. Otherwise, I wouldn't have two stores. My wife works at my other store.
Reputation is the name of the game.
Right, and she's only been doing it since, we've been married since 75, is when we opened up that store there. And she does a lot of the, you know, she maintains the front.
Oh, she's terrific. Takes care of the rips and golf bags, handbags, you name it.
Like that. The heavier she was.
Very good.
I have a young fellow that we taught ourselves. He came, he used to work on and off for many years.
And he's coming on beautiful.
He's doing
very good. Nice, nice, very, very good.
So you find that the apprenticeship method of teaching still probably is the best.
Oh, yeah.
That's always, yeah. They do have schools somewhere throughout the United States, I'm sure that do.
You got to do the actual work.
Yeah,
I mean,
you got to do the actual work. You know, it's like any, like you go to a technical school to learn mechanics or paint and body work and so forth. Well, I'm sure they have schools set up for our industry too. It's just not in this area. Mm-hmm. And this is a very, very fast growing area, as I'm sure you're aware of, you know. And it's, like I say, because of the fact that it's, you know, I really like being in a shopping center like this here because of Publix and Eckerd's. It's a good draw.
Yeah.
People come
Publix
to service
terrific,
plaza. So
terrific
speak,
draw.
You know, yeah. And my other store is by a Publix also. You know.
And that's in
Del Rey.
Del Rey Mall, yeah.
The Del Rey Mall, they're renovating that mall there.
Yeah. In a lot of, like, barbershops and stuff like that, people just come in and hang out.
Yeah.
Does that happen to you?
No.
They used to happen.
Not
too
much.
Ago, not
years ago, yeah. Like when I was in Connecticut.
Sure.
But things, there was hardly
downtown,
anything to do.
You were downtown.
You probably
downtown,
did. You probably fixed that 3-4 pairs of shoes a day, 7-8 pairs.
Yeah.
So what else are you going to do? You always get a straggler just hanging around.
Everything
you
used to be reversed.
Yeah.
The machines and everything used to be in the front, or the work area used to be in the front.
I used to work in
the
window.
In the
you haven't got that picture, huh? When I was in Hartford, I used to work right in the window.
Yeah, I got that picture, yeah. I don't have it here.
Right in the window.
You used to work right in the window. That way people come by and they can kind of sit there and watch you do the work and so on.
I was right on the main street. You know what they call Main Street up north is where all the, you know. Yeah, yeah.
Now, why has that changed? Why is the workplace now in the back?
Well, because a lot of people now, they're so used to going into shops.
Well, to start with, that's it, right there.
Right. See the dirtiness. And that's why when
in those days, you go into a shoemaker shop, you don't see anything like this.
No.
You see leather all over the place, chips, leather chips and everything.
Right.
Now everything is nice, you know, in the front.
And people
in the back, there's all the dirt.
Cleanliness is more of an important.
Oh, yeah.
If you have a clean shop, obviously.
I wonder what caused that switch.
It's just personality, really, is what it is. I still go in the shops today that are really cluttered. I mean, even down here in Florida, people that are good shoemakers, but they're just, there's some people, I believe in having a petition to have my machines in the back and keep it neat in the front. Because down here, you have a lot of people from all over. And, it's, you know, if you're in a small neighborhood and so forth, it really doesn't matter because people know you from a long time. Well, nowadays, you know, people come in and it's just like clothes make the man, you know. If you have a bad looking shop or you know
it reflects on the person.
It reflects on
it that way.
Work and people. A lot of people. That's dirty. It's just like a woman going into a dirty bathroom. You know, you'd rather wait, hold it, and go to one that's
a person.
You know?
A person I'd say feels that comes in a nice clean place and she's got a pair of fancy looking shoes.
Sure.
Say white or bone colored.
She paid $150,
$200. You know what I mean? They walk in a shop that's.
Oh, man.
Clutters. Jesus, I wonder if I should trust this guy with my shoes. I wonder if he's going to keep him clean. That's you know, when he puts the heels or whatever has to be done on him. You know what I mean?
But
and you'd be surprised.
No,
people
because,
didn't. I wouldn't say they didn't care, but I'd say it was a different era.
Those
put
days
it that way.
A lot harder too.
Oh,
I mean, your parents would. Could probably tell you stories that were shocking you today.
Sure.
I don't know what your parents did for a living and so forth, but you know, there were times growing up and so forth.
Things are so changed.
Years ago, they utilized as much space as they can for, in other words, the whole shop was it. I've always, my dream was to have a nice shop like I have in the Delray store, and then this one here came through to have a nice looking store here. People just come in and say, "Boy, you really got a nice looking store here."
That's right.
Important. It's important to me. Because
important to the customer, too.
They're complimenting me, and they're going to go to you and say, yeah,
hey, you know that, that place that,
well, he's got a nice little shop.
Nice, clean
nice
place.
Work or whatever. That's the biggest thing.
Not like
even
the days
today, people don't like the prices of things because they don't realize what it takes to set up a store. It's a lot of money now. It's today, even now, if you went out to buy all new equipment to set up a shop, you're looking at over $45,000 just for machines.
And I opened one for $500 in Hartford one time.
What was the,
many years
what was the most important machine to have?
Well, the stitcher, there's the finisher. The stitcher, I say, is kind of very important because before the stitcher, we had so many of them by hand.
Right.
You know, the soles I'm talking about.
Yeah, I have the one that he had up north in Connecticut. It's over 60 years old.
Yeah.
I had it rebuilt, reconditioned.
It's still right here.
It still runs.
I worked on that machine in the 30s. Can you believe it? And
that's probably one of the ones.
And this shop, I was trying to tell you. This shop that I paid $500, I'll never forget it. I don't think I had air conditioning. Do you think I had heat? I had a little belly stove like this. I used to put the wood in it. I never forget that. You know, all these things do come to mind sometimes. I'm laying in bed and I think about all of these things. No air conditioning. What a difference.
Higher, electric's higher, material. Everything basically is higher now. You need these things to do the job. People, in those days, you drop them off, and you can have 2, 3, 4 days. No, nobody really was concerned. Today, everybody's in a hurry. They want it yesterday.
No, today you
wait for it. Well, I get fast service. You
service,
can sit down and wait
service
at the shop
is big.
And come back.
Today service means a lot.
That's the biggest thing. And dry cleaners are the same way, barbershops.
In Hartford... And the shop I had in Hartford, the name of it was G.I. Joe Shoe Repair. I had just come out of the service, so at that particular time, everybody was talking about G.I. Joe's coming home. This and I said, what the heck? I call it G.I. Joe Shoe Repair, big electric sign, you know. And but you don't get that kind of work that you get here. So to make up, a little more, I had this friend of mine, he was a shoeshine boy in the Aetna Insurance Company in Hartford. See, that's big insurance. They have thousands of people working there. And every day, the truck used to bring me work from the Aetna Insurance Company. And I used to do it, and next morning, on the way in, he used to take it. Of course, he used to get his percentage and make ends meet, see?
So in a sense, it was everybody, in towns and communities like that, people can work together, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
My father's always taught me to get along with my competitors. And I
always.
So I have a good relationship with all my competitors in my area, in Delray, the same thing.
And
if they need something, they know it depends on me
and
so forth. We don't really shut down each other and so forth. They charge what they want, and I charge what they want.
Oh, yeah. In case one of his competitors' machine breaks, let's say. Why leave the guy stranded? So he'll throw his work together, come here and finish him, or just for stitching if it's...
Help each other that way. The tables can be turned someday.
Of course.
Baraka send me people for customers, and I send them for
orthopedic
work.
That's right.
I don't want to mess with it myself. It's
or dye or dye work and things like that.
It's nerve-wracking,
Yeah.
For me, and you have to be patient. Your dye work's another dye art.
When we were in Boca, we used to do at least 50 pairs a week.
Yeah.
Dying.
$3-$4 a pair.
$3-$4.
$20 a pair.
And my wife did all that. She had mixed the dyes and everything. Today, everything is mixed already.
Yeah, they got the cans.
And the price is $15-$20 a pair, and they pay.
Yeah. How did your wife learn how to do the dyes?
Through charts and everything. How to mix. I bought some kind of, they had some kind of machine that it tells you just
that was
how much of this, how much of that. Good. And so then
like
you geez, what I went through, lady.
Today,
I never say die.
Most shoe repair shops
never
are husband and wife team or whatever. That's it's a family family business is really what it is.
Is that because of the nature of the craft itself?
Yeah, But most people, first of all, you can't trust anyone better than your own family.
Mm.
And then a lot of people, it's hard to. Get someone that's willing to learn, mm-hmm. you know, like I always feel that, you know, if somebody wants to learn, I have them come in for a couple of hours or a week, I mean a few days a week here and there to watch. And then if they get a little interested.
I'm going to change the tape.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've had deep, I'd like to, again today, I'd like to find somebody that would be willing to, you know, sacrifice a little time here and there to learn the trade, and then, because you can't really pay someone big bucks in this, but it's, you know, you could, you know, you really can't pay anyone a decent wage until they can really make money for you, and that's through production. You have to be able to produce and produce quality work. You know, both in, you know, in both those ways, because I mean, you can get the work out fast and be sloppy, but to get it out fast and, you know, what a lot of my work or, you know, a lot of shops do, is the most important thing. You know, it's just like production of cars and or production of anything. I mean, you know, you got a guy at the end. I don't want to be worrying about. I have to inspect all the work that goes out if I have an employee working for me. You know, you have to in the beginning you have to watch. You know, because I'd like to, you know. My wife works real hard at the other store. I'd like to eventually get someone just to learn more or less to work the front counter a little bit, to do some of the rip work, the sewing of bags and golf bags that she does, even on a part-time basis, you know, just to supplement. And then as time goes on, and the longer you're there, the longer, you know, there's no customers come in, you're sitting in the back talking, and so far you're watching me do the work or whatever, you pick up more ways of doing things. It's just like you and your profession. You didn't learn everything the ways you're doing things overnight. You learn through
watching
you know, the actual interviewing like you're doing here and so forth. And then someone says, well, why don't you do it this way, do it this way, use this approach. Well, it's the same thing works in this business. If you don't greet your customers with a smile or cheerful and, you know, always make them feel at home or make them feel, boy, it's great to come in the shop because you always make me feel good or whatever, you know, and show concern. And really, it's really great. The best thing is remembering names. Now I'm starting to take names and a phone number where I only used to take phone numbers. And it's when you get with any business, you become personal with your customers. Your customers like that in any business. Like I say, the biggest thing, I'm getting not old, but you know, I'm getting older now, and I don't have the drive like I used to have. Keep up with the work, but you have to keep up with the work.
Not like the old man. The old man used to go to work at 4 o'clock every morning when I was in Boca. And Sunday, and Sunday, that's right, in Boca.
Yeah, and I used to, when I first opened
You must have seen all the write-ups I got.
Yeah, that's my father, and I was write-ups over there.
And I'm talking years and years ago, from the Boca News, and then we got the other one.
In the Delray store there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, we've been in a limelight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's been very...
We made history. Yeah. People, we pioneers.
I still have customers that come from Boca to my dad's shop because, you know, they knew, even though the name was changed, you know. Oh, yeah. We said Sammy and Tony, it's formerly a Boca town.
The first time that I changed the name when I opened the one in Delray. All the other shops were Cove, which Cove today still exists. Cove Shoe Repair, because I happened to originate in the Cove Shopping Center, see, in Deerfield. Yeah. So I called all my shops Cove, the old three of them, see. Which
no,
today,
then.
No, at then.
Do you find the kind of work that you do, the repair and the front camera, do you find that you kind of like a social worker in a way too, really having to deal with, because shoes are, you're talking about people being comfortable as well as being, as well as being able to walk. Do you find yourself ever advising the person?
Yeah. That's all you can really do. You can't really tell the customer you need this or you need that. I would suggest that they have a foot problem or something. I suggest that they see a podiatrist, someone professionally, because we're not allowed to touch feet. I mean, yeah, I can't touch bare feet. I could be sued, in a sense. I mean, I don't think anybody would really take it that far. But I'm not, my profession is not, I don't have to have a license or anything to do my trade, which there are a lot of people in a lot of different aspects now are looking that certain people should have a license. My business or a business that never had licenses before, why should my business be any different than anything else? No, because they don't have no schools, so I'm not certified to be a shoemaker or shoe repairman, so to speak. have the certification, because it's something that's come down through the generation, down and down, and that's mostly what it's from. If anyone like the fellow that I have working for me, learn through us, me and the fellow that I have worked for me, which was the best around. And he was manager of my store. I had recently laid him off because things were a little slow.
Yeah, you very good.
But he's the best. He really is. Very, very fussy.
Very particular.
I mean, very knowledgeable. But, you know, when you learn, like he did, he learned from his father, Larry Wickham.
Wickham?
And he was the best that I have ever had. And he learned from his father and the right ways to do things.
But then again, if he's not going to make me any money, because he's so particular,
to where it's, you know, because of the production wise,
he's not good to me.
Yeah, I would give.
It's good to be the way he is, because
I was proud to have him working for me.
But if he does a $60 job for me and it'll take him 4 or 5 hours,
well, that doesn't, you know. That's,
I mean, this is my matter of speaking, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not making any money.
Yeah, because you know you have to pay.
I'd rather not do the job.
Yeah, because he was, I had paid him a top dollar.
Oh, yeah.
I told a lot of my competitors what I was paying. They said, wow, you know, because it was good. But he was worth it to me. But after a while, things, he couldn't produce as much for whatever personal reasons he had and so forth. And so that was part of some of the reasons that I had to let him go, too. You know, I had to start thinking of myself.
Of course.
But even to this day, I think about sometimes, you know, if someone was really interested and wanted to come in after school or whatever, and just watch.
But like they won't stay. Today... The first thing they ask you, before anything, what do you pay an hour?
Which is, you know.
What would they have done if they had to go apprenticeship like me, let's say?
Yeah, you didn't
do that. For what pay?
Yeah.
I had to go in there on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know why?
Clean up.
Not to learn. To either clean up the shop a little bit or go collect his bills.
Mm-hmm.
Would you believe it? 12, 13, 14
years old.
You
got to familiarize yourself with all the materials, the sizes, thickness, what goes on, the shoe, what's right,
go,
what's not right. You know.
My mother let me know.
Okay.
There's no playing hooky over
the
there.
The old school. Yeah. Today
we were more firm, you know.
You and I, our children have it easier. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, that's, you know, because that's, we want to give our kids different than what we had. Mm-hmm. Just like our parents wanted to give us different,
oh, sure,
and so forth, you know. But the only thing I'm sorry that I ever did was I'm sorry that I never took it up at an earlier age and got more as interested in it as I am today when I was a lot younger, because I probably could have come close to retiring in another couple of years, you know. But that's how the crow flies. That's all.
One question I had with the setup in the van. So I've been told on occasion that basically the arrangement you have your machinery in, it's pretty much a personal.
How
do I have?
Is it online, like the stitcher all the way to the left?
Well, you can check and see, and then you can get your own view on that. You want to step back, take a look, sure. Yeah, stop that.